You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I am Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 11, Episode 6, titled On the Inside. They're talking about the house. They're talking about... what else could they be talking about? I don't know.
Daryl as a mole.
Okay.
He's working on the inside.
He still doesn't feel like he's on the inside. I don't know. There's a scene at the very end of this episode that makes me think he might not be as on the inside as he thinks.
True.
Well, he doesn't even think he is. Yeah, it seems tenuous.
There's monkey men crawling around on the inside of walls.
Manimals, as I like to call them.
They're also
womanimals, yeah. So I don't know what to.
That's true. They're
call
true.
It, but
there's Connie's getting all up inside zombie guts.
Yeah, she uses that trick to pretty good effect.
She got the insides on the outside. That's what it should have been called. On the outside.
They need to
smear the zombie guts.
If you can shield somebody just by standing in front of them, they need to designate somebody the guts guy, right? Like, hey, if it comes down to it, shove us all into a corner, rub guts on yourself, because we don't want to get really gross.
That's right. That's right. There's no need for all of us to have to do laundry. Come on. Yeah.
Right. And the Alexandria laundry system, not as good as you would hope. So,
No. I mean, I saw it. It's a fat guy riding a bicycle.
And that fat guy's dead and the bicycle's burned. So.
That's true. That was a hilltop. They got they're beating the shit on rocks now. Oh, my God.
Yep.
What do you think of this? Another Greg Nicotero directorial outing. Yeah.
Now that you say that, that makes a certain amount of sense. I don't dislike it. I think it's a little silly. The concept of a manimal is ridiculous, but no more ridiculous than any other ridiculous thing we've seen on this show. So I let it slide. And that said, I kind of liked it. I get what they're going for here with, you know, Virgil's change of heart as his, meeting with Michonne, let's call it, sort of pays dividends here. He's coming back to the real world a little bit, but I don't know what his fate is at the end of this because he gets stabbed a bunch. So who knows? This might have been his one episode he gets before his death. And everything else, I guess the reuniting of Connie with Kelly was pretty nice. Although we didn't get much of it. It was just like one hug and then I guess they're off.
Yeah, what are we always saying about The Walking Dead? Like, you know, they either need to get serious about shit or they need to get to Z Nation level. And I felt like this episode with this director, I mean, half of the episode I thought works in kind of, a schlocky, low budget horror movie kind of way. You know, like some crazy backwoods cannibal family, like some bone tomahawk.
Hills Have Eyes. Yeah.
Hills. Yeah. Just go nuts with the horror and the bulging yellow eyes and I thought that like clearly Nicotero loves this stuff. So I thought that stuff worked. There was a couple of things where I wouldn't say I was terrified, but like I was appropriately concerned and it felt like watching one of those schlocky kind of slasher flicks. There's one point it's like, holy shit, is this the house that the Maggie was talking about, but I thought that she had kind of probably wrecked that shop. So it's like, oh, they're clearly this is the setup. That was the allusion to the setup for this episode. And then, the Reaper stuff, I guess, was okay. it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it'd be a lot more tense if I didn't know that Daryl, like, honestly, yeah, just knowing that Daryl, nothing can happen to him is a damn shame, because, like, final season, you know, Norman Reed has been doing this for 11 seasons, like him getting to graduate early midterm. Like, I could see that, you know what I mean? But like, none of those scenes have any real tension. And then Carol, you know, redeeming herself by stumble fucking into Connie. Like, I don't know how I think about that. But yeah, it's nice to see The Walking Dead kind of swing for really gross fences, especially this close to Halloween. So I think those aspects of the show were pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, the haunted house sort of feel that they go for here was both. I don't know. I liked it, and also it felt a little bit weird in this context with the manimals running around. You wouldn't necessarily think that they would have rigged an entire house to be like, I don't know, Saw level, like booby traps. And it felt like a scary movie, and I don't mean any scary movie. I mean, Scary Movie, the series, where like, there's a ghost in this house or something, and it's doing strange things. It felt a little more organized, I guess, than I would think Manimals would be.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, these guys out in the woods, like setting kind of improvised traps and stuff, would make maybe a little bit more sense. But yeah, they're so far gone, they're just essentially, you know, Gollum at this point. I don't understand. None of their tactics seemed all that sophisticated, you know. But they're able to make sliding passages, and or I guess they probably
inherited like a Winchester house or something, right? It's like,
yeah. So like, what? That's the thing. It's like, there's a lot of questions about these people's existence and how they survive, given their location and all that kind of stuff. The episode is never going to give us any of those answers, because all they care about is the horror house aspect of it, which worked well. Like I said, fine. In isolation, yeah. Like, if this was a Halloween episode of The Walking Dead, who gives a shit? It's nice.
And I like what they're doing with Connie being, you know, extremely tired and wanting to get home and being afraid. Like, the thing that made this work for me is the fear of the whispers, right? Without that, I'm like, well, Connie, just fucking sleep. You know, you're in this house. You got somebody there to stand guard. Just sleep. But she's scared to death of the whispers. She's just been through this very traumatic experience. I get it. And that stuff was working really well. Like, when she's peering through the razor blade hole, right? And she thinks she sees something, but did she? Because she's really tired. She could be hallucinating. And then later on, she does hallucinate, right? She does see something through the wall that's not there. So it worked pretty well what they were doing with that part of the episode.
And it continues to be terrifying anytime we're inside Connie's POV in a stressful situation, because, you know, like permanent stealth zombies when you don't have hearing, like anytime you go in there and it's just dead quiet. And, you know, she's frantically performing. You can see her breathe, but she can't. I think that stuff is really effective. I'm honestly shocked that Walking Dead hasn't just beat that shit into the ground.
Yeah.
Like, anytime you want to generate tension, throw Connie into something and go into her POV so you can't hear anything.
She's been gone for half terrified. A season. So.
True. She's been doing the Eternals work over on. She's getting the Marvel checks, like, deny before her.
Yeah. Don't deny her Marvel checks.
Don't deny her Marvel checks. That's right.
Ugh. All right. That's enough preamble with that joke. let's get into the recap. But first, let's take a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We try to make it super easy to support Making Podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
All right, we start off the episode with Connie and Virgil running from something. Don't really get to see what it is. They eventually run into a house where walkers begin to pile up at the door. I thought at the beginning they said, no, let's not run into a house. But then they end up just running into a house.
Well, I couldn't figure out what was going on with Connie. Like, they slowly throughout the episode tell the story of her being just traumatized by this days on end being stuck underground as zombies kind of, which does sound terrifying.
Especially if one of those zombies could be a human that wants to kill you. Yeah.
True. And you're already in a world of silence and now you're in a world of utter darkness in that cave. Like, that must have been just a terrifying experience, just going along with this writhing mass of corpses, just like all of your senses robbed except for smell and touch and I guess taste. You want to get your tongue involved, but like all that, like, oh yeah, I want to smell and oh, I want to touch all this fetid corpses. Like it's gotta be. And they did a really good job of kind of showing that. I thought some of this, like, running face first into a giant spider web with a giant spider on it, like, that was, like, nice little Necatero touch that's kind of got me squicked out at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me a lot, like, of the house especially, and kind of the gothic semi-southern setting. It reminded me a lot of, like, American Horror Story Roanoke season. I kept on getting that vibe, because even the protagonist of that season kind of has a little bit of commonality with, like, John Murphy, Kevin Carroll.
Yeah,
Virgil. So I thought that stuff was good. And, you know, you got these, there's a couple things I thought, like when the grass started moving and then they pan back to the Connie and she just, like, eyes bulge out in horror and she just starts screaming. I thought they were going to do some kind of fucked up tree int like zombie thing. No, she's just traumatized by zombies in general right now. So, yeah. I like that. I like that. It's a good cold open.
It was. Yeah. And not showing us what they were actually running from, I think, was kind of the capper there.
Yeah.
Carol back at Alexandria doesn't want to wait for the council to form a plan to go get Connie, and she's ready to ride off on her own. She finds out that Kelly has already ridden off on a horse. So they got to go after her.
She's riding hellbent for leather. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, oh, man, I started like, oh, Jesus, a debate about whether Carol should go alone or whether we should wait for a bigger group. And then Rosita's here as the bargain maker. Oh, it's to split us up into groups of two. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, we're going to split the party. None of this plot is actually that important.
No. And Carol was always going to go regardless. Like, whatever they said, the council will banish you. Who gives a shit? I'm leaving. Like, yeah.
The way Rosita does that, like, it's funny because she comes in to deliver one line. It's kind of like, I don't know. It feels like the actors, Rosita's actor is just kind of over the show. You know, like, she's coming in, she hits her mark, she delivers her line. Why not both? And then gets off. Like,
well,
there's a certain
giving
kind
her
of
anything,
like,
so why wouldn't she be like?
Yeah, she started to get some stuff when you had Sadiq and you had Dante and you had the baby and you had but like all that shit kind of like Gabriel just took over. Yeah. And the only thing she's got to do is kind of huff and puff that she isn't able to go out on the hunting parties as much anymore.
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like it's getting some final seasonitis on some of these folks that haven't gotten maybe the best, juiciest roles to sink their teeth into.
For sure. So then Connie examines a map in her pocket while Virgil checks out the rest of the house. He tells her no one's here and you need to get some rest while I keep watch. Connie refuses to sleep because she thinks it's unsafe. And she decides to search the house again.
Yeah, like this. At this point, they did a pretty good job of being, oh, this is what's going on with Connie, with the like jump flashbacks to like being, you know, just jump scares of a few frames of writhing hordes of zombies. This house, though, assuming we're still in the DC suburbs, I don't know what kind of gothic horror hunting lodge cabin we've got going on here that has all these moose heads, but also has all these like 18th, 19th century portraits of.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of like hints of opulence, but it's ran down, but it's been in design. I don't know where the hell you find a house like this in the DC metro area, but there you go.
Maybe the manimals redecorated.
What is up with this map? Where did she get it?
I have no idea.
I felt like this wasn't explained. I mean, I'm sure why they showed it, because I don't know where it came from, who gave it to her, etc.
Yeah, if we're supposed to remember this map from a previous episode, I definitely don't.
No.
Is this something she could have like made from memory to try and get home? But then why?
Maybe why write
it down if it's coming from your memory anyway? It's. And they did a couple of things in this episode that I was curious about, and this is one of them.
Because I guess Connie might not have been to Alexandria that often, right? She was a Hilltop regular, so maybe she's got some kind of script. But like, why would she be carrying that? Or maybe like she's writing down everything she could remember to help. I don't know. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, same here. So then we go over to the Reaper's hometown. Are they at Meridian? I don't even know anymore.
I think so. I think this we've established now. Like I don't know, because now that we know that Pope doesn't trust Daryl, I am less sure that this is their actual home base and this is their full extent of their numbers.
Yeah.
Because I found this location a little bit underwhelming, but maybe, I don't know.
All right, anyway, we're over there. Maggie's dude's being tortured by Pope's dude. Carver, I guess is his name. Pope invites Daryl to get in on the torture, so he does, and Daryl has to cut off the guy's finger. But he manages to get Maggie's location, let's put that in quotes here, out of him. And then Pope sends Leah, Daryl, and Carver to scout it out. Actually, he sends a few other people too. That's who he says is going.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about this. Like, Daryl's done some pretty rough shit, like, you know, when he says I've done worse, maybe not to a friend, but like, yeah. We've seen Daryl torture people before, we've seen Daryl execute people before, but it is I'm not sure what they're going, like the guy, he's basically saying go ahead and give up Maggie to save yourself because I'll be here and I won't let anything bad happen to Maggie. This guy doesn't know Maggie or doesn't know Daryl that well, and probably his capabilities. Maybe, you know, Maggie's told them on the way to this thing, the legend of Daryl killing the tank 1v1. I don't know, but like this seemed like a lot of confidence to place in oneself that you can single-handedly protect this guy. And like, I don't know, Frost just gets killed at the end of this no matter what happens. Like, unless Daryl's plan was, I'm going to go to this location, hope that Maggie and the full group is there, jump these guys at half strength, and if that's the plan fucking failed, dude.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Frost is going to die. I honestly don't. I know that Daryl won't die. That's the only thing, because like, I would be on pins and fucking needles because this Pope guy seems real scary and it's a scary situation. I wish I didn't know that Daryl was going to survive no matter what.
Yeah, I guess it's the best shot he's got, though, right? Like, what else is he going to do? If he doesn't give up any information, then he's killed. If he gives up Maggie's location, then he's a traitor, a Judas, if you will. Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of good options here. So trusting Daryl is probably the best option he has.
And on the first time through, I thought with this guy with Carver. Mm-hmm. Which is funny. The guy is carving pieces, you know, wanting to carve pieces off of people. His name's Carver. He was being pretty defiant of Daryl for no good reason. And I thought that kind of shocking, you know, with them baptizing him by fire and like bringing him into the congregation in the two episodes ago, that Carver's kind of like open defiance. I'm like, what part of the squad is unclear on him joining the Brotherhood aspect of it? And why is Pope cool with this? I guess it's because Pope never fully trusted the guy, but I don't know. There's wheels within wheels. It blew my mind when they revealed that Leah actually didn't know that she was going to be tested in the fire room. Like, this guy's playing playing all kinds of games, and it doesn't doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So
yeah, hopefully it'll make more sense as we learn more. I do think they did a better job this time of having Daryl pass information in plain view to this guy, to Frost. Because when they did it in the cells last time, it was super obvious to anybody watching that they're winking and nodding and saying, we're going to tell them what they want to hear, right? Except that's not the story at all. This time it was a lot more subtle, a lot better. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
And then we go out to Connie, still checking the house. She sees someone hiding in the walls in the bathroom, which sounds insane because it kind of is. And she runs down to Virgil to try and tell him, but breaks her pencil. And so she destroys one of the paintings by scratching "Not Alone" into it.
I actually thought this, the row of portraits with the eyes gouged out and stuff. Like, I mean, you know what's happening. Like, I'm like, oh, there's going to be a false wall. There's going to be eyes. But it's still creepy, you know, like this dusty cobweb thing with these paintings with the eyes gouged out. I thought, you know, the safety razor, double-edged safety razor dispensary slot in the medicine cabinets, that I thought that was cool. And looking at that disgusting yellow eyed
dude, I would never put my eyes up to one of those. Never. I like, one of my greatest fears is being like having a, I don't even want to say it because it'll set people off. It sets me off. I can't do it. Just eye damage is bad. It's bad.
Yeah. Best case scenario, you're going to get a rusty razor blade through the eyeball.
Yeah.
And then you go to Monkey Men Manimals from there. But I thought that was great. That yellow eyeball was disgusting. It was shocking. And again, pretty well done.
Yeah, they get some real Gollum energy going on.
They really do. They really do.
The loincloths and all that. Yes. Also, I really liked the paintings with the eyes gouged. Yeah, that's never not scary. That's never not creepy. Really, any kind of defacing of any photographs or especially paintings. And the fancier the frame, the more terrifying it is.
Oh, of course.
I think,
course,
like,
yeah,
if you just get your IKEA frames, your straight matte black.
Sure.
Squared off ones.
How
not
much
as scary.
Evil energy can be contained in that? But you got some ornate, you know, 17th century gilded frames and there's some black magic contained in there.
On a frame that looks like Michelangelo could have framed this. And then we go,
did you know that those things were real? Those are the, you know, we don't see them anymore now because we all either use electric razor or some kind of seven bladed monstrosity from Bic. Yeah. But like those, that used to be everyone, your grandpa, your dad, if you're listening to this, used to, shave with one of those double-edged safety razors where it's like you know, it's about an inch long, it's sharp on both sides, it's really thin, and they're hideously sharp. Like, it's very unsafe to handle them. So a lot of times you would collect a whole bunch of them and then, you know, put them in a container and then dispose of that so your trash man doesn't cut his fucking fingers or he's getting, so like almost it was a ubiquitous feature in homes from 50-60 years ago to you know, have a little slot where you could just slide those things in when they went dull. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I always wondered how you get them out, or do you just fill your wall with razor blades?
See, that's the thing. It's like, I don't think they just go into some void in the wall. I there was always like a, you know, you could retrieve like a box, you know, they'd all slide and you'd slide out a box from that thing and then you could empty it, or you could throw the whole container away or whatever.
That makes more sense than, you know, doing some plumbing. Like, you're just putting the burden from the trash man onto the plumber, right? Where he cracks in your wall and suddenly an avalanche of razor blades comes out.
Sure. Let's throw some wet, sharp metal objects where all the wires are in the house. That seems safe. Yeah.
Love it. So there are actually six scouts going to approach this yellow house that Frost told them about. And they're coordinating their approach. Daryl's able to signal Maggie inside the one of the houses by shaking the down power lines before they breach.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought it worked, although
it's risky. Like, you're essentially, if anyone's keeping lookout at all, you know, that gives them about a minute that thing is probably swaying to kind of notice that, like, oh, fuck, that's a big thing. But it's quiet. So I thought that was kind of, took me a while. I'm like, what the fuck is he trying to do? Jumpstart to town?
Right. I thought, is he testing this, thinking maybe he can climb it? What's
He's gonna start doing some CrossFit shit, just grab two of the cables and just start doing sine waves with them back. But like, yeah, it's like, oh, and then when it was from Maggie's perspective, I'm like, ah.
Yeah. So
oh, can I ask you this?
Yeah.
Where the what? So just now that we know them and we've seen their fate, they just don't wear masks anymore.
Dude.
Like, yes. That thing is wearing masks to increase the terror and anonymity. And now they're just going around not wearing masks.
Well, they didn't have an extra set for Daryl, so they figured what's the use? Oh,
they didn't want him to feel left out. Yeah. I see.
Well, also, like, really? if they can't all reap, then none of them are going to reap.
Because I'm counting two, depending on how to, at least one, maybe two charred corpses in the last couple of days. I think you got extra masks, man.
That's true.
I think you got a bunch of actors that are like, it's bullshit that we're in this movie. We're not even going to get seen. Fuck you guys. Like, yeah. But that's,
I mean, that's 100% what it is. It's, we want to see the characters emote. We want to see, like, we want to give these actors time on screen. It's, yeah, it's bullshit.
Hey, man, nobody forced you to put them in fucking hockey masks. You could have gone with camo. You could have gone and you could have done a lot of stuff. And you fucking chose this. And now you've, the one unique thing about these guys, other than their religious bullshit, is the mask.
They could have been astronauts. What if you have a whole group of, like, evil astronauts, right? Those big bubble helmets. And then you can see right through those.
Yeah. Yeah. Get weird with it. Get, like, you know, Fallout.
Right, they're already doing mammals.
Have a band of cosmonauts. They call themselves the cosmonauts. They're going around in fish bowls over their heads. Yeah, why not? It's terrifying.
So they enter the house. Blunderbuss?
One of them has a blunderbuss that they stole off the set of Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, none of these. Like,
do they?
Yeah,
I didn't see that. Wow.
Yeah, like some kind of 16th century antique shotgun. Like, these guys are wild. These guys are really wild.
Maybe their blacksmith was like, I'm going to make some guns, but I need an example of one. So they went to the Smithsonian. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They just picked up the first gun they saw.
Sure.
Which happens to be the first gun that was ever made.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, they go inside the house. No one's home. Daryl suggests they stay for a while, but Leah sends everyone to search the rest of the town. Daryl's a little clumsy here, I think, but it's not terrible. It's not awful.
No.
You know, he's just making suggestions that are not good.
Right, but they seem, you know, they seem like they could be good suggestions.
Yeah, he's got reasons. Like, let's
It's like, it's not exactly the smoothest I've ever seen him, but, like, he's making shit up as he goes along. So,
and it is about the most lines he's had in 11 seasons. I swear, he talks so much in this episode. It was weird.
They're really shining a spotlight on Daryl now that, like, Rick and Michonne are gone. He's clearly the draw now.
They've already inked the contracts for the spinoff.
Right. Really buttressing the character up.
Mm-hmm. We go back to Kelly, who's on her own. She finds an abandoned camp with Connie's bag in it. And she reads an ominous cave journal, let's call it.
Mm-hmm.
This can stuff is really familiar. Did they do this in the show before? Like the perimeter with the wire with the cans on it to make noise?
Yeah, we've seen him do that before, the, like, Predator deal.
I thought so. I couldn't remember where. I thought it was maybe around the Terminus times when they were kind of in the woods, just out in the middle of nowhere.
The thing is isn't Virgil not a great survivor because they've been on a I was thinking who did all this elaborate stuff, because Connie is deaf. I don't think it would occur to her to rig up a sound trap, and Virgil kind of like is a bit of a virgin of a zombie survivor, I think, because he's been on that research island, kind of insulated from all that. They haven't had to worry about daily attacks. So I was like, who did that? Also, where'd they get these horses? Is this where Alexandria, the rest of Alexandria horses has been? They stole them and trying to ride to Alexandria, but...
apparently, there are just wild horses roaming free everywhere in these woods.
Apparently.
So maybe they just picked a few up.
Yeah, and that might be true a dozen years after the apocalypse. All the, you know, you got all these feral domesticated horses running around, maybe.
All right, Virgil checks out the bathroom, but doesn't see anything and thinks that Connie's hallucinating due to lack of sleep. Connie's losing her shit. She decides she's going to leave. And as they walk down the hall, the house just closes off a wall on them, cutting each other off. Connie's chased into a staircase by some kind of freakish manimal.
I like the this was effective. I was like, oh my, because this is something, you know, you expect a lot out of The Walking Dead at this point, but like, I did not expect feral man people.
No.
And just the sudden silence when that door slammed shut. She's very good at emoting terror.
Yeah. She is. And doing the silence stuff that they do in this episode was really effective. I found myself much more in Connie's POV, Connie's like headspace here.
Yeah, and they did some James Wan-ish things where they do some misdirect, because like I was looking when they went back to the bathroom and the camera kind of holds the frame of the vanity for a while. I was expecting something to, you know, when Virgil shut the mirror, that there'd be something there that you would see that would, but no. And so I was kept on like getting tense. And then like, boom, out of nowhere, the hallway closes off. You know, again, this isn't The Conjuring, but I thought it built in the early parts some effective tension here.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Nicotero wanted to do some straight up horror stuff.
And especially it works like, so I think Nicotero does know a thing or two about horror, and, you know, having this deaf woman make her way down this hallway and like, you know, kind of like, and that this unseen figure just like in the lower third of the corner of the camera, kind of like you just see this a shock of filthy matted hair kind of dart, like that she's being stalked. It worked for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's well done. Then we go to Daryl's scouting party searching another house, and they find some evidence of recent inhabitants. He realizes they're hiding. Daryl, that is, realizes they're hiding under the floorboards and kind of makes a move to obfuscate that a little bit or misdirect from it. Although he
drags the carpet a foot over. Yeah, yeah.
He probably could have done better. Probably could have put his foot over that trap door, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Daryl says, hey, we should all leave. And Carver calls him out on like being pretty wishy-washy, wanted to leave or stay. And then Leah stops this petty bickering and tells Daryl to get with the program. You're either with us or you're not.
Stop pissing off the Carver before he carves you up.
Yeah.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is reward unto itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Next up, Carol, Magna, and Rosita catch up with Kelly. She shows them what she found, and Kelly's worried as they all move off to find Connie. Not much.
Kelly
here.
Fell in mud, and the show showed good restraint by not having a mud zombie come out, because I feel like every time you've ever seen mud in this show, going back to like season 2 and 3, you've always had some disgusting mud zombie come out of it. But they clearly shot the whole episode's wad on all the manimals, makeup and action and loincloth. Loincloth budget soared in this episode.
It was just
so they
an infinite amount more than usual.
Yeah, and you know, Greg was like, "I need my mud zombie. I need my." And Kang's like, oh, "Well, here's the spreadsheet, man. You got this gross yellow eyeball, and you got the mud zombie. You got to cut one." He's like, "Oh, fine. I'll take the razor blade slot eyeball. Jesus." But he wanted a mud zombie.
Oh, yeah.
Lives for the mud zombies.
She told him, look, if we give you the mud zombie, we got to cut 10 dudes from the Power Ranger director's episode later in the season. We just can't do it, man. We're giving up too much.
Yeah, and it's like it sometimes slips to my mind that Kelly and Connie are actual sisters because they're relative newcomers to the cast and they haven't really developed that relationship a lot. But I just kept on watching like Kelly, you know, her single-minded focus try to get her sister back. And I remember like how little like Maggie gave a shit about Beth until, you know, it was time for her to like lose her shit. Not, it's nice to see siblings care for each other and maybe take stupid risks for each other. And even though we haven't known these characters very long, it pays off really nice at the end.
Oh yeah. I mean, they certainly picked the two of the new characters to do this with that I would actually give a shit about. Cause if they tried to pull this stuff with Magna and Yumiko, I would have been like, yeah, whatever.
These people are like the only ones that have not been on my shit list whatsoever.
Right.
Like the new people, maybe Professor.
Yeah.
Professor.
Luke started off kind of on the shit list just cause he was a dip.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. But, I thought they did, and you know, that's the thing. It's like if as was reported last week in the feedback section, if Connie has kind of gone missing because they were in real life filming the Eternals for Marvel, you know, this is an effective way to put the character in the refrigerator, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, give a new piece of texture as PTSD. You know, you've already got the relationship between Kelly and Connie to kind of work with. I think they've, you know, a tough set of cards got dealt to them, and they played them pretty well in this aspect of the plot.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the haunted house scene, like the haunted house episode where Kingdom is reunited with Oceanside, because they've been away from Oceanside for so long. I feel like they're just waiting for the episode where they can have the manimals attack Oceanside.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Oceanside manimals. That's
yeah,
what
where Oceanside heading, gets stuck in a house, a haunted house, and has to find its way, fight its way out. Because it's the only reason I can see them putting it in the fridge for so long.
It wouldn't be a haunted house. It'd be a haunted tiki stand. A haunted snoke, a haunted surfboard rental.
Yes. But those aren't very big, so
that's
it
true.
Won't be a very long that's episode. True. That'll be a mini-sode.
It's got more, but they're still doing all the inside wall stuff, so it's like it's a lot bigger than it looks on the outside, because you got
but
all
it's
those
just
twists
surfboards
and turns.
Shutting off hallways instead of walls.
right. Walls made out of bamboo.
The manimal stops trying to break down the door, and Connie heads to the basement, which is full of human bones. And the place starts shaking, so Connie climbs into the air vents and then into the walls from there. I don't really know how that works. I guess the whole system here just runs through the walls of this house.
I guess, man.
I don't know. The mammals have modified
Plaza.
It.
Does not have a thing on this house, man. No. You could almost ride a horse through the cold air return system of this place.
For sure.
Also, like, these animals are smart enough to, like, it set traps and, like, partition the house, but they don't seem to know the layout. It takes them, like, 15 minutes to, like, oh, fuck. Oh, she went in this vent. I have no idea where it goes. Or I don't even, like, I was expecting a tense chase of, like, her through the vents by this man. Because, like, why wouldn't he was, like, right there at the staircase. Yeah. Why wouldn't he come down there, see the grate is gone, and just, like, bound up there and jump through? I don't know. But, like, every little subterfuge in this house just befuddled the fuck out of these manimals. Gave them 5-10 minutes of exposition and getting back together and be able to reset and formulate plans is nice. It's nice that they really, like, ah, oh, fuck, I lost the keys. I slid this panel shut and damn it, Tony, I thought you had the key. Yeah, no.
No, this is the manimal that, like, cleans the bathrooms. This manimal had nothing to do with the construction of the house. It was all the others who were out doing whatever they were doing, I guess, foraging, searching for food, hunting.
Yeah. And I thought it's like, it does a good job. Like, it just constantly trigger, like, the claustrophobic nature and the dark nature of these tunnels and side passages, tripping her cave PTSD zombie. They keep on going back to that.
It's very maze-like, too. I couldn't really get my bearings in this house. It seemed like every passage either was brand new, and I never understood.
Felt like there's a lot of magical geography, kind of like AKA a la The Shining, or the was it Haunting of Hill House or whatever? What the fuck was that thing? Was out on Netflix like 2-3 years ago, like where they had some of that unreal, like, this corridor usually opens here, but now it's doing that. It's pretty cool. I even like the way that the manimals are, you know, kind of running on their knuckles, going hungry. Like, like, if they catch, they're going to eat you, man. And they're not zombies. They're people. It's going to be gross.
So Virgil's, pursued by a manimal, and Connie sees him struggling through the walls. She gets the tension and almost gets a knife in the face in return. And then this manimal sneaks up on Virgil and attacks him. Connie distracts manimal long enough for Virgil to stab him. And then Virgil comes after her, starts stabbing through the walls, and almost gets her, but Connie rips through and he stops stabbing.
Yeah, he pulls her through the plaster.
Yeah.
I thought that was effective too. Like, you know, Connie's on the other side of the wall. Obviously Virgil's freaking out.
She had already told him, hey, there's shit in the walls, it's trying to kill me.
Yep.
So he stabs it. He tries to stab it.
Her being helpless to do anything but watch, like, this menacing guy kind of raise up from the floor and grab, like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Like I said, this the best parts of this episode felt like a 10 or 15 minute short horror festival, like, submission, like something like, you know, a better than average short horror festival little reel.
Is it weird to you that Connie never talks? Because Connie's deaf, she can speak. Has she always been deaf? Because if she's deaf since birth, she might not be very intelligible. But
maybe there's something I forget because I remember, I don't want to say something because I remember asserting, like, I don't think sudden adult deafness actually happens. And then I was, it turns out I had my head up my ass because, Angel Theory, the person's playing Kelly, actually did, you know, this is something real life she's going through right now. And I guess there's, like, different, like, head traumas and fevers and other things like that that can make you go suddenly deaf. And I've known a couple of deaf people and they absolutely could make sounds like
intelligible words, too. It's not. Just
for sure. It's distorted because, like, it's amazing. I also knew a guy that went deaf in his later on in life because of an accident. And he, for the first couple of years, talked normally, but the longer it went on, the more like he developed what I call an accent, because it's amazing. It's like, imagine, like, the kind of mush mouth I am, and I can't hear me making mistakes. So it's like, imagine trying to write your hand write a signature without looking at it, and you do it again and again and again for years and years and years, that thing's going to drift over time.
Yeah,
just like, so like but I, not being able to speak at all. But I don't know. That seems weird. But like I said, I a couple seasons ago said I don't understand what they're doing with Kelly. It seems kind of dumb, seems kind of unrealistic. And turns out it was entirely realistic. So yeah, all kinds of deaf people, I imagine. Maybe there's some that are deaf mute that they can't literally make, because it doesn't seem like she can even like whisper or like.
Not that we've seen her try. No.
Yeah, I've never even seen her like cry or like, you know, make noise when she's like crying or in pain. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know enough about her history, or if they've told us, I don't remember, to know if she was deaf since birth or if this is a more recent phenomenon.
Sure.
But yeah, I was just thinking, man, it feels like she's pretty helpless here to warn him about the manimal behind him.
Right.
Where she could just shout like behind you or look out or something. Or,
mm-hmm. Hey, or anything. Just make any kind of recognizable.
It's me. Yeah.
Yeah. Any kind of recognizable people noises, you mm-hmm. know. Seems like she's incapable though.
Yeah. So then Daryl speaks some information, some mm-hmm. I don't know. He's out in the living room, he's standing above the trapdoor, he's talking to Carver about like their numbers and the walls and the guns, as Maggie is sitting below.
You got 20 people behind strong, cold rolled 12 foot high walls with guards at every 30 feet.
And I have a blunderbuss and a slung over every back.
That's right. You got guns. He's like just giving you're led by a man named Pope with a loose command structure. You swap guards every 6.5 hours. Like, yeah,
he's got a forehead. I haven't seen it.
And Carver, to be fair, kind of is all like he's like, this is bullshit, you know. Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's the point of this? What are you doing, man?
Yeah, yeah. And then him and Leah have a sidebar where they're kind of talking about how they feel about the situation and Pope and Daryl. She's like, you always had my back, but you threw me to the dogs with this fire test. And he's like, wake up, everything's a test nowadays. Mm-hmm. So that's how he's dealing with the cognitive dissonance. We can see.
And Leah goes to like shut all that down because she is the leader of this troop here. And when she does, Carver just happens to glance down at the floor and spots a trapdoor. And he opens it up, but Maggie's group is gone. Apparently they'd snuck outside moments before. Why didn't they sneak out earlier?
I don't know, because there's a lot of questions I have about, like, there's a couple things that happened kind of just so in this episode, and that's mm-hmm. one of them where, you know, I don't know why Daryl goes and checks the basement and it's like everything's good. No one else like thought to double check his work, because that seems like that would have blown up the party. And like what Carver said, like, you know, everything's a test, and if you trust this guy, you're going to fail. And that's the stakes for Leah here. If Daryl goes down for being an inside man, it seems likely he will, then she's going to go down with him probably.
Probably.
But, God, do you think that they're going to spin off like him having a romantic partner?
Oh no.
On the series.
Ride for two.
Yeah. I mean, we already have Care, but I never thought that they would have I didn't think that they'd do Will They, Won't They for three seasons of Carol and Daryl. But like, if they have like, you know, Carol's the third wheel with the Daryl and Leah show. I don't know. She's got to die, right? She can't come back to Alexandria and reestablish herself.
I think she's going to die.
Okay.
But we'll see. So Kelly's group doesn't know which way to go. So they ask her to decide, and she seemingly picks, well, she picks a random way, as best I can tell. She puts her nose up to the wind and like senses where Connie went somehow.
The air smells less foul this dress. She pulls the Gandalf.
So they show us a box on the ground or something. I can't tell what the fuck this is. It's so dark.
Or a mirror. I'm not sure. I think it's something.
I thought they were showing it to us to let us know they went the wrong way, but then they end up going the exact right way later in the episode. So why did they show us this?
I think it's something about the manimals and them hunting and herding. Like there's some kind of like, you know, that's like you're supposed to understand that that's like a peephole station like the paintings are, I think. But again, I could not tell what the fuck it was. It looked like some kind of like it could have been like a primitive periscope or Some kind of, yeah, I don't know, like a makeup compact that, but it's clearly significant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the second time in a week where they've done something, like when where we had the 12 ice cream cone lady, you know, mugging at, like, there's clearly significance here that I don't know.
Is this the real Stephanie? Now,
I don't know. I don't know. Isn't that so? Yeah. Semi spoilers, by the way.
Well, but, we talked about this. If you listen to our podcast, our feedback podcast for last week, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that this isn't going to be something that is important in the next episode, you know, because obviously you're supposed to notice the thing going on with the ice cream cone girl and like, oh, I wonder what's up with that. But there was no answers in that episode. Yeah, I watched this episode twice, and it's like on the second, I was no clearer. So,
okay, I wasn't either. Virgil gives Connie his knife and tells her to keep going no matter what happens to him. She says, "Nah, we're leaving together." A whole bunch of stuff, togetherness. Virgil, you know, tells Connie about his crazy days on the island, how Michonne saved him, and he wants to pass that on to her. But she's like, "Nope, we're getting out together." More manimals show up at the house. Apparently there's a whole pack of them. They attack Virgil. They stab him a bunch. Connie drags his ass into a corner and uses the guts trick to hide herself and him from a flood of walkers that she lets in by opening the front door. The manimals, I thought, were all eaten by the walkers, but they're not. And then Kelly's group shows up to save them from the remaining ones.
Unfortunately, there's nothing they can do to make me care about Virgil and Connie, because Virgil is a shitbird. He's a crazy person that almost killed, and I guess he's seen the light now, and he's kept con- so like I'm starting to warm up to him.
Mm-hmm.
But like this we either do it I don't know, like this we either do it together or not. Just it's weird because I like Connie, but mostly because you know, her relationship with Daryl. And I don't like Virgil, and these guys, like him trying to talk her out of not leaving him and all that kind of stuff. It just didn't really work for me because they don't have it's not like there was three episodes where we saw them get close and we see them, you know, him trying to take care of her and him trying to talk her through her PTSD and all that kind of it just felt like a little bit of filler on a kind of a shortish episode. Anyway, like I feel like this is a minute or two shorter than some of the others that we've seen this season.
Yeah,
Greg Nicotero filmed his haunted house episode and it's like, oh shit, this wasn't a pandemic episode. Fuck. I actually got damn. And then he started adding stuff. And it's like, oh God, we're gonna have to blow up this. We're gonna have like a mini Morgulizing scene of 5 minutes where these guys talking. It's kind of like those damn chipmunks on the Warner Brothers cartoon. No. Yeah, I've sacrificed myself for you. No. I sacrificed myself for you. And then, I don't know. Also, like, this is another kind of a horror movie thing where invariably once you start getting good looks at the monsters, it just doesn't it starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
And we had these mass packs and they're like, you know, just skinny, malnutritioned people that don't have like higher brain functions. It's pretty easy to dispatch them. So they stopped being scary. What did you think about Connie's solution to the problem? Because I thought it was pretty.
The guts idea, know. Yeah, I thought that was great.
Letting the zombies do the fight, and it's a little bit of like a whisperer thing, you know. You got the guardians coming in and wrecking the cannibal shop.
Yeah, especially because they set this up at the beginning, right? Like with her coming in this house and leaning against the door to try and keep all these walkers out that are piling up at the door. We know there are a bunch of walkers roaming around out there, and with all this commotion, a bunch of manimals screaming and shit. They're probably trying to get in the door. So, yeah, I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, it's just a damn shame because all that stuff that they gave Virgil to do and say just is like, this is like the sixth version of this kind of speech we've seen on the show.
Right.
So, and like him and Michonne was kind of barely developed.
Mm-hmm.
I know that felt kind of weird. Him like, nah, I'm still staying here, and then change. It's just a weird character, and that stuff didn't work. So,
yeah, I'm mostly with you.
Do you think Kevin, or I keep on calling him Kevin because of the leftovers, do you think Virgil is dead?
No, but I think he will be dead if they don't get him some attention very quickly.
He got stabbed like three times by filthy cannibal manibulot knives.
Yeah, probably through the lungs. Yeah, he probably will die. I don't think he is currently dead.
Let me ask you another question. Uh-huh. How many degenerate teenagers freeze-framed on these attacks trying to see some wool animal titty?
Oh, there are better places, kids. Let me tell you, I get it.
But like, I think that the answer, the number's not zero. And also, it's guys, come on. You're down bad if you're doing this. Like, come on.
This is the shit I was doing in the 90s when pornography took about an hour and a half to download a JPEG. So
100%.
We've got better than this now. Come on. Yeah, you can do better, kids.
Yeah, but as soon as I saw that the wolf animals were running around topless, I'm like, oh, Jesus, there's some real hard up 13-year-old trying to freeze frame AMC titties.
And you know they're not going to give it to you. You know they're not. They're wearing pasties if you even get a shot.
Yep. If you penetrate the matted hair and the shrouded darkness, you're going to get pasty. 100% guaranteed. Sure. AMC's not going to. You know, they'll not pay writers and they'll drive a show into the ground. But one thing they will not do is let you see a little bit of titty.
Yeah, they spent $8 million CGing out the nipples of the woman.
The CG and pasty budget for Walker nipples. It's a lot. But this, just to wrap it up, this is what I'm talking about. This is like the Z Nation shit. I can't find fault for it because this is exactly what we've told them to do. Like, if you get to a point where you can't tell a compelling story, just fucking go gonzo, man. And this action where everyone's eating everyone and everyone's getting torn apart and like, oh, maybe some of these animals get away because they're going to climb up. Nope, they jump. They just jump back down. And I'm pretty sure like we're never going to see these manimals again.
I did love that.
These are one-shot manimals.
The classic, you know, pull out the guts, pull out the intestines, play with them for a little bit while you're chewing on them. That kind of stuff. Yeah, that's the kind of zombie work that really gets me going. Nicotero is great at that.
Yeah. And I also really liked the reunion time. I thought the two sisters did a really good job of showing how genuinely, like, how kind of amazing this is, like, in a literal miraculous kind of way. Like, that probably Kelly, you know, because like everyone has been telling her, like, God, you know, Carol's filling your head full of lies, like this is false hope, you got to give up, you got to move on, and she never did. And even she probably felt foolish during some of this time, and just, you know, also like the growing dread of like, oh my God, I'm so close, what if I don't get there in time, because they're clearly being followed, they're being tracked, that notepad, that journal that they found of Connie's, like, really, you know, really sold us on the atmosphere of the cave and of her paranoia and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, yeah, they did a great job of showing two sisters through against all odds coming together and embracing. It's a nice moment.
All right. Finally, Carver, Leah, Daryl and crew return and tell Pope that they got away. Sorry, couldn't catch him. Pope's not mad because while they were out, he was interrogating Maggie's dude and he says he got everything he needed out of him. And apparently he's a walker now. And that seems real bad for Daryl, especially as Pope and Carver walk off looking back at him and laughing. And, you know, is this real? Is this meant to just induce paranoia, or is there some real shit that he found out about Daryl that he's going to wait to spring as a trap?
There's no way of knowing. But it's funny, these guys doing this mean girl shit where they're walking around, they're looking back over their shoulder, whispering each other's ears, like, oh, look at his fucking hair. It's so ridiculous, right? Can you believe his vest? Oh my God, his wings don't even match. Oh my God. He can't sit with us at the lunch table, right? No fucking way. it's fun. I mean, I don't know, because it's a great plan. Because if you got nothing, the test, you know, everything's a test, right? Testing Daryl's loyalty. Like, if he runs off in the middle of the night, then he knows, right?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like Pope has got a little bit of a brilliance to him. And I just wish that I didn't know that Daryl is 100% ultra, ultra, ultra safe, because I would have genuine. Can you imagine us being like genuinely stressed out about like, what if Norman Reedus dies at the mid season mark or the one third season mark or something? Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. Yeah. But maybe Leah, like I could see that being an interesting character note that like he hasn't fallen in love with anybody, finally falls in love with somebody. They leave. There's this complicated relationship back and forth. She's in a weird cult. And then he ends up getting her killed. That's kind of interesting, but I have no read on whether Pope is fishing or he's got something. Do you got a read on this?
I don't. I think, like you said, there's no real way to know here. But it tells us something either way about Pope, right? That he is pretty cunning when it comes to his plans. You know, it's not just, hey, we're going to throw this guy's girlfriend in the fire and see how he reacts. He's you know, testing and retesting, and he's got layers here as far as his plans go. He's either going to get something from Daryl when he's on the mission and they're going to find Maggie, or he's got the backup plan of, like, I'm going to torture this guy and get more information out of him. And even if that doesn't work, I'm going to still make Daryl think I did. And then, yeah, it's pretty good. I'm really liking what they're putting down here. And I hope that Pope continues to be, like, this isn't all just bluster. It's also, hey, I've got a plan here. The one thing I think won't happen is I don't think Daryl runs. I don't think Daryl gives up the game here. I think Daryl sticks with his story until there is an actual confrontation where he has to fight these people.
Or if he runs, he's taking Leah with him. I think he absolutely bolts if he gets Leah with him.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
My question is Boston Rob just still holed up in this church?
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't he it been be. A day or two? I don't know, because, like, the timeline's a little murky to me, but holy cow, this guy was, like, on death's door, and they left him, like, three granola bars and a canteen.
Yeah.
There's a clock on that, man, and you still gotta, like, take... I am starting to feel better and better about the Reapers being closed out this season. I don't think that we are going to contend with them going forward. I think these were, like, something to kind of slow burn.
Episodes?
Yeah, or, yeah, okay. Yeah. The first third of the final season, I think that we're going to dispatch them, or essentially all but dispatch them. Maybe there's a few Reapers as characters going forward, but as a threat, I think we're going to close them out.
I don't know how.
And to make way for the Commonwealth and the rest of the season.
It'd probably take, what, the death of Pope to do that? I mean, because yeah, I just 100%. Don't see how. To me, like, Maggie hears, oh shit, they have 20 people, guns, and walls. Mm-hmm. And her reaction should be, fuck, we can't take these people. Let's leave. We've got an injured priest and some asshole who probably wants to kill me when I'm asleep. Yeah, yeah. Maggie's reaction should be to just go back home and get reinforcements and come back, maybe. I don't think necessarily that will be her reaction, because she's been pretty bullheaded and stupid on this journey. Yeah. But
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, That's the thing. I don't know what Maggie's going to do about this, but now that she knows for a fact that they are way outnumbered, she should not pursue this.
So was Maggie, because, like, Maggie's group, what do we got? How many people were down there? Yeah, for sure. Four. Gabriel, Casey Jones, Maggie. What? I thought there was more, though. And Negan. So there's only four. Four versus 20. Yeah, there's no way.
No,
there's no way.
Even with Daryl on the inside. Maybe with Daryl on the inside, maybe you take out Pope first and then the rest crumble. But, like,
the Daryl got the guns, though, back, right? Like, they're not completely out of ammo and guns. Didn't when he met up with the old guy who we thought was going to leave him for dead, but, like,
yeah,
didn't he recover? So they still have some decent. And if the I wonder if they're going to reveal that a lot of these Reapers guns are empty.
Could be.
Because they use a lot of flying dagger, House of Flying Dagger shit for people that have working guns, you know? And, like, like the guy's got the blunderbuss. What the fuck? I
just
don't know.
River rocks in it.
Yeah. I do wonder if there's some little, you know, theatrical Batman type shit going on here where they're projecting a bigger force than they really are.
I mean, the Reapers are pretty theatrical.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Conversely, this could be a savior situation where this is just a satellite outpost of the main thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, because they've already done that. You know, we did that with the savior arc.
Yeah. Well, they did Morgan's thing like 15 times. So
true. And look at Star Wars. They try to pull off a fucking Death Star every goddamn trilogy. Yeah. So
sometimes twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's about it, man. We'll see what happens. I would guess we'll get back to Maggie next episode and we can see her try and come up with an excuse to raid 20 people with guns and walls.
Apparently Negan's going to teach her some new survival tactics that she hasn't picked up in 12 years of the zombie apocalypse. Yeah, that's what the
key is. You just be a huge asshole. They'll throw you in jail. You don't got to do shit. You just sit there for 6 years and they take care of three squares a day. It's amazing.
Or it's like he just starts unironically quoting Zombieland. Cardio, Maggie. Cardio. We're all going to change into sweatpants. We're going to start fucking running. Okay, then we're going to. I don't know. What did you guys think? We'd like to know. WatchingDead@baldmove.com is the email address you can use to get a hold of us. We consider all this feedback every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time on twitch.tv/baldmove. So you can either get your takes in to WatchingDead@baldmove.com, or you can try to get in through chat. You know, we got some live chatters in there, and sometimes they do some error correction, live fact checking. And get in their thoughts that way. But twitch.tv/baldmove is where we do that on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. And then the podcast comes out the next day if you don't want to mess with a lot of live stuff. So I'm curious to see what the old dog Negan can teach some new tricks to Maggie and Chase and Casey Jones next episode. But we'll be back to talk about it then. You know we will. Penultimate episode of this third season. See you guys then.